previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
You're going to be tempted to say, screw it. Can't we just go back to HQ and do this the old-fashioned way? Pull out some fingernails, toss someone in an acid pit, fire up the old penis flattener, and sure, that sounds nice, but it also sounds easy. We're all here because we believe that there's a better way to make humans miserable.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 172 for the week of September 24th, 2017. I am giant flying shrimp, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Chowder Fountain, Sarah D. Bunting.
Holy shirt.
Bad Janet, Tara Ariano.
Tick, 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 tick. What?
And person most likely to be Banksy, John Ramos.
Lunch starts at 3 million pounds.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Extra Hot Great. Thank you for your patience while we took a week off so that I could try to put my house in order, literally. This week, we are joined once again by John Ramos. Hello, John.
John.
Hello.
Yay!
There it is. We'll be talking about The Good Place, which returned for its second season last Wednesday, right?
I think so.
Okay. I'm thrilled that John is joining us because John is, of course, my co-host on our Veronica Mars podcast, Go Pirates, which you can find at previously.tv/podcasts. But it was definitely messing with my head to be prepping Veronica Mars episodes and catching up on The Good Place, which I had not watched before. John, had you watched the show before? Were you keeping
no,
up with it?
No, same and same. Yeah, it was a bit jarring to see Kristen Bell in both these iterations at the same time, yeah, but I was into it.
Yeah, it definitely was. Tara and Dave, had you been watching it in the first season?
I watched the first four. That was the number of screeners that we got before the premiere last year. And at the end of the first four, I was like, it was a little labored. So I stopped and then I regretted it because as the season went on, of course, it was like one of the breakout comedy hits of last year. So when we decided to make it the topic this week, I was like, I was not unhappy to go back and revisit it. And everyone who said it was good was right. It did get better from the first four, I felt.
Yeah, it was just one of those victims of so much TV. I just couldn't watch it all. And since Tara wasn't watching, it's just victim to that. But I thoroughly enjoyed season one and I'm happy season two is here. So. Just one of those shows that slip through the first run cracks. It happens.
It's true. I don't think I would have picked it up if we hadn't been covering it, but it did have a short first season that was on Netflix. We also got screeners for the first four episodes of this season. Did you guys watch all of those?
We did. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Sure did.
Should we throw down some spoiler music?
We would, except I have no idea where those clips. There we go. spoilers, aho, fun ahoy, season two, Good Place.
Yeah, the first episode was a double episode smooshed together. I wondered how it would have played if I had not just finished watching season one, but it was feeling a little bit slow and self-regarding. And then we got to episode three where they started Edge of Tomorrowing the whole concept all over the place. And I was like, I loved that movie and I've seen it like five times. And I just thought it was really clever the way they did that. A lot of shows would have dragged the puzzle of how they were going to find each other and figure this out all season. But this smartly just decided to start Edge of Tomorrowing sooner rather than later. Did you guys agree that that was a good call?
It's so funny. I didn't even think of that analogy because when we were in episode three or four of the season and I turned to Dave and said, this is like a Westworld that I can enjoy. It's like Spite World, but you're right. Edge of Tomorrow is a good analogy too. But yeah, I thought it was interesting that, I mean, I think when you have a show like this where the concept of it is so high to begin with, you have to be taking it apart all the time or else you're going to get bored and the viewer is going to get bored. Like there's no way this show works if it's just like, and now we settle into, you know, what the good slash bad place really is like. Like, it always has to be challenging itself internally, I think, or else it's going to get super duper stale.
Yeah. I also enjoy that the dragging of high maintenance actresses in the person of Vicky is apparently going to be a season long thing.
Yeah. Vicky has stealthily become one of my favorite characters on the show basically ever since, you know, the secret of the show was revealed, and she's like been like this annoying actress character ever since. I think that actress in real life is doing a good job as the actress on the show. So I find it very enjoyable.
I think it's all pretty well acted. I have had new respect for Ted Danson ever since his season of Fargo. Mm-hmm. And it sort of worked retroactively to make me appreciate him more on Cheers. And my husband, past guest Dan Patrick Brady, was saying that it's a lot harder to play that Cheers character, that Sam character, than it looks. Like, to be sincerely stupid and not cheat it to the audience is tough. So seeing him do other things that are different is really interesting and gives me a better appreciation of Sam Malone. John, how are you feeling about Kristen Bell in this role?
I love her. I mean, the first 15 minutes I had a note of the first 15 minutes of the first season. I had a note to myself being like, yes, the show is for me, just because like she's been lying for 10 minutes and they have not winked at the camera once. You know what I mean? Like, I hate it when shows do that. And I love that she was able to commit to that in the beginning. But yeah, I like the ensemble. You know, I mean, season one was obviously much more focused on her character than anyone else. Now it seems like it's becoming a true ensemble kind of by definition with what they've done with the show. But she's great. I don't know. I never don't like her, so it's hard for me to, you know, be revelatory in this, but it is, I like the, you know, kind of three quarter heel turn of, you know, of a character for her. So yeah, totally, totally into it.
And she's getting to do a lot of physical comedy that I like that one. It's early in the first season, that one bit where she is like, he's like, do you have a minute to help the environment? She's like, do you have a minute to eat my farts? And then just flings an empty coffee cup, like nowhere near the trash can. And I was like, I wonder how many takes it took to get the exact right careless fling of the latte. So good.
I believe that was the first time Dave laughed out loud at the show at that moment. He enjoyed that as well.
Well, look, anyone inviting anyone else to eat their farts is funny. It is cheap. I will take it.
Yeah, but also clipboard muggers are like a scourge on big cities.
Oh,
like, I don't
God
miss that.
Shit.
Having moved away from.
You sure don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're the worst.
Yeah.
And you know, like, they're just hired goons, right? Like, most of these people are not true warriors for the cause. They're just, you know, poor college students, you know, making $10 an hour. On the sidewalk. They don't give a shit about the environment either.
I am not a crackpot.
Hey, speaking about I am not a crackpot, I have my theory about The Good Place, which is it's a live action Futurama.
Yeah.
Especially
in
season two.
I saw you say that on Twitter, yeah.
When they're playing so loose with sort of, not the timeline, but sort of the sliding doors, edge of tomorrowness of it. So Eleanor is Leela, Jason is Fry. Janet is Bender. Chidi is Kif. Yeah. Tahani is Amy, the fancy fraud. And Michael is a combination of the professor and the robot devil. Yeah.
But who is Zoidberg?
Well, there's still room for a Zoidberg, I think. There's lots of characters we haven't touched on.
Glenn is the Zoidberg.
Yeah, or the guy that gets crushed by a dumpster, maybe.
Yeah, and I guess the new boyfriend is Zap Brannigan.
Yes.
Yeah. but it has a lot of tonally. I found like as soon as they started going in, messing with the timelines and doing the resets on the world, it was I found it very very Futurama-y, and it's sort of like plays with the conceits of the show the same way. I enjoy that. Oh, and when I say Futurama, I mean before all the movies and all that bullshit of all the reboots, when it was still good.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that they are committing to the philosophy behind it as well. That even though there's been less emphasis this season on, you know, learning your Kant and stuff, that's still under sort of subtextually underpinning everything that's going on. And also the idea of destiny. I mean, granted, the only four people who are people in this world are more likely to find each other, you know, when everyone else is essentially like a robot and meant to be impediments to them. But I like that no matter how hard Michael tries, like they keep figuring out how to find each other, even without leaving notes and stuff. I think that's interesting.
So, okay. So in this world, all the people that are working for Michael, exactly, like, are they imps? Like, I'm trying to figure out what.
Yeah. I think they're, if he's a demon, imp, I think is fair.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Demon foot soldiers. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Sure.
Tara, I really agreed with your point earlier. Like, the season one obviously had this huge secret, and as such, it was able to sustain an entire season where they think they're in the good place. But now that, you know, the audience is kind of caught up to everyone else, like, they do have to keep mixing it up. And I did really like, I mean, you were kind of touching on it before, but I really like the element of it being like now almost like a Bad Place workplace comedy.
Yes, totally.
They're just trying to like figure out how to make this work. And then, you know, there's all these characters getting in the way and
labor
that's fun
problems.
Too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes. Absolutely.
How did we all feel about how Hawaiian pizza was the worst kind of pizza? I was like, thank God.
Yeah.
Amen, Ken Tremendous. Amen.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't understand people who like Hawaiian pizza, such as Tara's sister. It's just like,
my whole family. That was the pizza that we got when I was
a kid. That's too bad. Yeah, especially because you lived in the middle of the country in the prairies where they can't make pizza to start.
Oh,
anyways.
My God. Shut up. Leave Saskatchewan alone. It has enough problems.
I love they make their jokes really work for people who know pop culture and are paying attention too. Like, I mean, just little throwaways they really commit to, like when, I guess, quote, real Eleanor is like talking about her upbringing, and then she's like, and yada, 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 and then yada, yada, yada. And then I learned English from watching Seinfeld. Yeah.
It's
just like, that's a solid piece of business. I really enjoyed that. And
they're obviously huge Seinfeld fans, too, because isn't she like, oh, no, I'm sorry. That was a Veronica Mars episode. My bad. Ignore her. Someone else talk.
It's all connected. Yeah,
I'm true. I also appreciate that Mindy exists. The introduction in season one of the medium place was such a brilliant twist. And I think that character is great. That actress is obviously loving playing that character. And I appreciate that they are only deploying her very sparingly, because that's a joke that could get tired really fast. But I like how much we've seen of her.
Her season two appearance was real solid.
Can I just put down a theory now, just while I'm thinking of it? Because, you know, when we went back to watch season one, we knew that there was something happening. You know, there was like an actual storyline going through this beyond just people trying to be good. And it was pretty obvious to me that twist was something to do with Ted Danson not being who he says he is at the start of season one. So that wasn't a complete surprise when he ends up, you know, being the Bad Place employee. But I'm wondering if the later twist is that this is in fact his Bad Place, that he is being tortured.
Yeah, okay. I thought that too.
Yeah, that, you know, the fact that nothing ever works out for them and all these elements that he designed are backfiring and making his life miserable is making me think that somehow there is a demon Bad Place.
The fact that he's basically forced to team up with Team Cockroach suggests that they're all being manipulated to me. Like, so I agree with you, Dave, but but I'll be interested to see. Like, and also the casting of Mark Evan Jackson as Sean is so good. I mean, he's great. Obviously a Fremulon favorite from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but, but I couldn't think of anyone more perfect. So.
The interactions between Michael and Sean and sort of the workplace elements, such as the flashbacks to Michael in the drafting room before he became, you know, when he was still an apprentice, that whole vibe actually reminds me a lot of the workplace parts of People of Earth. I don't know how many people are watching that, but it's very similar and it's very appealing in the same way, especially this season of People of Earth, which has sort of doubled down on that part of the show.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, alien and very familiar at the same alien, haha, People of Earth, and familiar at the same time. And that they can be so glib about things such as human death and everything just really kind of elevates that trope, that kind of workplace hierarchy stuff. And it works very well in both shows. I was very pleased with both seasons.
The other thing that I was reminded of was in terms of the innovation of this show and its structure and its format was The Last Man on Earth, which mm-hmm. Stars Ted Danson's wife, of course, Mary Steenburgen. This is like a bouncier version of that kind of weird world building or yeah. world unbuilding, I guess, in that case. That's another show that's not, it moves a lot slower. I find it a little bit lethargic, actually, certainly compared to this one, which is more to the bonkers end of the spectrum. But yep. The willingness of Last Man on Earth to sort of just reset itself or write itself into, you know, weird story corners and then have to figure out how to get out of them is interesting to me. So if you haven't checked out, if you like The Good Place and you haven't watched Last Man on Earth, you probably would enjoy it.
Tara, how did all the Friends material work for you?
I always love Friends material. Come on. I thought that was great.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's a good show. Here's my final question. Tara, did you think I would like this or not?
I thought there was a 50-50 chance. I know you like Kristen Bell a lot. But the high conceptness of it that turned me off initially, I thought would maybe turn you off, but the fact that we both like had to watch all of it made me think, well, if she stuck with it, she'll have probably gotten this as much out of it as I did. I maybe 51-49. I thought you'd like it.
Yeah, I was wondering what you would think about it because Michael Schur as a guy and like occasional sports podcaster with Joe Posnanski and human being who was responsible for FireJoeMorgan.com.
Right.
Is thumbs up, but then his TV work is like not always my thing. I like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Parks and Rec, yeah. I was and I'm probably not going to investigate further based on my pop culture fraternal twin, John's advice. That he's like, that's not for you. Mm-mm. So I wasn't nervous about it, but I wasn't sure what to expect, but I sort of was expecting to like it. So I think I did.
Well, we're going to keep watching.
Yeah,
I think that's where a couple of the Kristen Bell's sugar-free performance for one thing, and also just like how snappy the pacing is, overwhelm mm-hmm. a lot of like potential like quirk fatigue.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard to pull off a sustained high concept show, especially if it's a comedy. You know, like I think genre shows get a lot of the graded on a curve with the fan base, I think, you know, just because it's something, you know, world building is something they enjoy. But when you're into comedy, it's really hard to sustain, you know, actual quality comedy material and not let the concepts that you built sort of overwhelm it, you know, where you get to the point where you're doing more storytelling than comedy. And I feel like this really does a really good job balancing that. Like to me, this feels like news radio in heaven or hell, you know, like it's still very funny all the time, but they're still always moving, you know, this conceit forward without it being like the banana in the smoothie where all you can taste is the banana in the smoothie. And was there raspberries in here? Apparently not anymore. Thanks, banana. And so this show is not bananas, is what I'm saying.
And also what we were talking about in season two, the fact that it can like kind of rip up what it's done and make something else out of it. If something's not working, they have some flexibility and they haven't, you know, painted themselves into a permanent corner. Yeah.
Like who knows what the show's going to be season three or season four. Like this whole contingent could, you know, take over The Good Place for real or something. Like, you know, they seem to give themselves a lot of room to move around and do new things within the world they've built. And that's good. I mean, it's always sad when you get something that works, but then dies on the vine and everybody's scared to change the formula. Mm-hmm. And when you have a show that's all about changing the formula all the time, then, you know, you sort of built in a protection against that. And that's, you know, I would like to see more of that, frankly, on television.
I would also watch a show about the pitch preparations and meetings for this show.
This is one show where the actual making of would actually be worthy for once of a post-show show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Get Ryan Hansen. Hello and goodbye.
Get Terry Crews. Yeah. And you know, this is an after show that actually would be kind of interesting to have. All right. So we're done.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got to close the spoiler tag. I just realized. Good place. Spoilers are now at an end. Now we move on to else things, stuff and stuff. What? Probably lost some points for that outro. English fail? Me? What? It's time to go around the dial. Tara Ariano, our first stop. What do you have this week, Tara?
Well, I have a brief mention for last week's episode of Broad City, which featured an amazing performance by RuPaul as the manager of Sushi Mambo in New York, where Alana goes and applies for a job. RuPaul was, Dave, was he not amazing?
He was. And what is up with his skin? Like, I know he's in... you know, a Hollywood production and, you know, there's makeup artists and stuff, but that guy's what, like mid-50s?
Oh, he's in his 50s for sure. Yeah.
Oh my God. His skin is weirdly perfect.
He's gorgeous. So yeah, he's the hottie manager of Sushi Mambo. Alana needs to get a job and he, you know, has to tell her that she needs to be the biggest bitch in the world. And so she is and gets mad tips and then she doesn't like how it makes her feel and decides to be super nice instead. But then she accidentally trips someone. Anyway, I won't ruin it all. But if you're a fan of RuPaul, even if you don't normally watch Broad City, it's a good one. But mainly I wanted to talk about Better Things, which is back for its second season on FXX. This is a show we talked about last season with Pamela Adlon playing a very autobiographical version of herself. She also created the show. It's the same, which means good. there is a kind of a reference in the first episode to, I guess, the big reveal or realization of the season one finale, which is that Frankie, her middle child, is not a girl, but a boy. And Frankie is dressing much more androgynous now, but they don't really address it or talk about it kind of at all. The first episode is a party that Pamela Adlon's character throws at her house. And the crisis is that her oldest daughter, Max, has started dating this guy who's like twice her age and then some, because he met her at her high school play when he was dating one of Sam's friends who's her age. And then he dumped her and started dating Max. And so it's about, you know, her needing to accept this relationship so that Max won't take off. But then Max maybe indicates that this is not quite what she wants either, and that this guy is too much. And there's a funny runner with the guy's brother continually hitting on Sam for no reason that we can tell, because she's not inviting it at all, really. And then the second episode has a great first chunk about her dating this guy that she hates and going on a whole rant finally when he gets mad at her for being mean to him about how nice she is, that she's so nice she slept with him 10 times even though she knew the second that she met him that she didn't like him, and him leaving her in the parking lot at the restaurant because he won't drive her home after that. Anyway, Better Things is a very understated show. It's not super plotty. It's definitely a character study, but it's so good. I save it to watch on Sundays so I can really like savor it. It's a wonderful show. You should watch it if you're not. A Peabody winner also, I found out when she was just on Colbert this week. And my plug, I will mention Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara, the new podcast that we are doing on Will and Grace with Kevin O'Keefe. It launches this Thursday with the reboot premiere of Will and Grace on NBC. We got screeners for the first three. Whoo, there's lots to talk about. So that is available now. You can find it at previously.tv/podcast, but it's available in the podcast app of your choice now. So check that out.
John. So I am going to talk about Halt and Catch Fire, which returned a few weeks ago for its final season.
Sorry, can't help myself every time.
I'm seeing everything.
We were watching the last episode, and Tara fast-forwarded through the credits just as I was starting to do a robot dance with the dog. It was so disappointing. Just one of the few credits I never fast-forward through.
Oh my God! Yeah, I agree with that reasoning. That the credits are great. I've only seen the first the premiere, which was a double episode, so I'm not going to say that much about it, but. I'm just more so glad the show's back, honestly. Like, its goodwill for me is so high that like it could almost do no wrong in this last season. I know, famous last words, but basically my observations are that everyone likes Gordon now, so he's probably going to die. I don't know anything, but that's just my guess. They did. Anyone who saw the end of last season knows that there was a time jump, but they did a series of kind of smaller time jumps and a, you know, kind of a nice, like one take looking series of montages that was cool to watch. And now, Gordon and Donna's girls are like, I guess like preteen to early teen age.
I think they're in high school, both of them.
Okay. Yeah. It looks like one of the younger one, I think, is going to be a significant, have a significant storyline in this season, and she seems actually pretty cool. So, so I'm into that as well. And Cameron and Joe, guys, remember talking on the phone? It's like there's Cameron and Joe spend like an entire episode basically on the phone for like literally like two straight days, and it's kind of funny to watch. But yeah, I'm super psyched the show is back. I don't know, Tara and Dave, what did you think of it so far? Or it's you're probably farther ahead than I am. Yeah,
there are three episodes left, I think. Or four.
Okay.
Two, and then a double finale. But yeah, it's been very strong. Lots of really interesting stuff happens. I won't say more because you're so behind.
Okay, cool. I appreciate that.
I am still enjoying the show. I will say this is my least favorite season.
Not having watched season one.
Huh?
Yeah.
Not having watched season one.
Who among us did?
Right. But what I was going to say is my least favorite season as far as what they're tackling in the show, you know, the technology, the projects, you know, as we move closer to actual production and development of stuff that I was there for and in the trenches for, like I was pretty early. I was working in LA for an interactive agency. I remember the day that Netscape debuted the center tag. So just to give you an idea of how fucking old I am.
Dave is 80 years old.
Yeah.
Time for another Dave update.
we were building PlayStation. Wasn't even PlayStation.com because they actually stubbornly refused to do that. We were building Sony.SEP. It was a whatever they're American. Like it was like had like four subdomains in it. It was ridiculous. Anyways, we were doing that, and then the center tag came along. We're like, oh my god! And then background colors, like, oh my god! Now the background could be black. Sony will love this. Anyways, as we move into that era, they're sort of playing a little loose with the timeline this year. Like they're pitting Yahoo and Google as contemporaries, and sort of building a race for the search crown out of this season, which it wasn't really that. It was really one superseded the other relatively quickly. Yahoo, you know, was the first take on search. And then as algorithms got smarter and smarter, it actually pretty quickly faded. Like I think everybody who has been on the net as long as we have can kind of remember the 2 months where suddenly you stopped going to Yahoo for everything and you were going to Alta Vista or Hotbot or whatever.
Lycos. Go get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a little less interesting to me than all like the legacy retro stuff, like the equivalents of them doing, you know, FidoNet and stuff like that with Mutiny. I thought that was much more interesting. And also I feel like in the culture, now everybody talks about VC and all that sort of stuff, but that was sort of like still very much behind the scenes in internet culture then. You know, it wasn't sort of the headline grabbing cultural talking point stuff that it is now. And so I feel like they're sort of playing very loose with this season as far as like the talking points of the internet at the time. They're sort of taking mid-90s all the way to like the aughts and sort of cramming all that culture and all those elements into sort of like this weird compacted reality, which is, you know, I don't know if people that are weren't, you know, living and breathing it care, but it just sort of like, it bothers me a little bit. End of story. Also, Cameron, why is she still around? She's such an uninteresting character now.
She's gotten worse. Yes. Yeah. But I appreciate where things seem to be going with her and Donna as the season gets to the back half.
Yeah. And I'm curious what she is going to be making next, what that project is analogous to. And
right.
Since you haven't watched John, I'll spare you from it, but we don't know yet. But, you know, is it, EverQuest? You know, like, what is she building? Mm. And,
right. Yeah. Or Second Life.
Like yeah, exactly.
Right.
Anyways, John, that was the nice
which
segment, John.
Which show was I talking about?
Anything to plug?
No. Well, Dave's thoughts notwithstanding.
I'm enjoying it. I just feel like because they're on a season and they know it's their last.
No, of course. I understand where you're. I get what you're saying. That's interesting to hear about the whole like venture capital situation back then, because I wouldn't have known that. But that's good, like, historical info. Okay, so for my plug, it was already mentioned, but Sarah and I are doing a podcast called Go Pirates about Veronica Mars. We are in the stretch run of season one, the best part of the entire series. So if you were a Veronica Mars fan and have not caught us, I would urge you to find us in the previously.tv suite of podcasts.
Yeah, and you can go directly there. Woo. previously.tv/pirates. We'll get you right there.
Excellent.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I would like to talk about American Beauty Star. It debuted last Friday on Lifetime. I would only like to talk about it once, because this is, sad to say, one of those shows with a promising idea that they don't quite know how to execute on in a way that makes it interesting for people outside the industry. Basically, it's makeup artists and hairstylists competing in a sort of sheer genius meets Project Runway, whatever, makeup dome. It's not going to make it onto my DVR because it airs on Fridays is one problem, but with time shifting, that doesn't really matter. The real problem is, well, actually, there's a bunch. First, the challenge system is a little too convoluted. There's an equal number of hairstylists and makeup artists, but then each one is paired with if you're a hairstylist, you get a makeup artist, but you're like beauty directing the whole photo shoot. And there's a catwalk and photos a la America's Next Top Model. So that's just a little bit like there's just kind of too many people and too many moving parts to the challenges. The judging and mentoring is not great. The host is Adriana Lima. She is rather charming, actually. She's wooden, but she says that up front and that she's nervous. She has some Camila Alves pronunciation problems with the word stylist. I don't know why they keep doing this in reality TV. Work with your host. It's the word they say the most often. Figure it out. But she has a cute moment in the premiere with an 18-year-old contestant from Manchester who is worried that his accent is too thick for them to understand him. And she's like, hold my cerveza. It was pretty cute. But the mentor, Sir John, who is, I guess, Beyonce's makeup guy, is like aboard with an expensive suit on. And the sad fact is that not everybody who is tops in their field is cut out for reality judging. The judges proper here are not good at articulating why a given makeup story or hair narrative is good or bad or too Insta or whatever their comments are. They're not all that insightful. And I think the biggest problem is that not all reality competitions are created equal in terms of fitting into that one elimination per week template. I don't know if anyone else remembers Top Design. I'm sure even people who are on it barely remember it. But this show is like that, in that it should just be a season-long challenge. In Top Design's case, it's like, remodel a house. And in this case, I don't know, prepare for a magazine cover shoot, dress someone for the Oscars. I just don't think it works to be picking people off, especially like on a weekly basis, especially when you're not good at saying why that's happening. And the audience just doesn't have that much to dig into in terms of the different sensibilities and skill sets and what we're supposed to think is good or bad. So it's not terrible. It's just not good enough. So I will not be watching that. And now you don't have to either. My plug is for The Blotter. My wife, Tara Ariano, will be on this week, Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock to talk about Law and Order, True Crime, the Menendez murders. And we will also be debuting The Blotter Summary Judgment, which is like The Blotter minis. But since it's true crime, we wanted something a little more serious sounding. Minis, like it's murder. It's not cute. But we will be talking a little bit about each episode of Law and Order True Crime as the series continues. Tara will also be joining me for that and came up with the name Summary Judgment, which is brilliant. So
thank you so subscribe.
All right, rounding us off around the dial, let's talk about Star Trek Discovery. Just debuted last night as we're recording this on CBS All Access. It was fine. I don't know why they were keeping this from the critics unless their thinking was it'll create so much buzz, everybody be talking about it. It was fine. It wasn't great. It didn't blow me away. There was some weird design decisions. I'm not quite sure how they fit into, you know, the Star Trek cinematic universe. They did a reboot of the Klingon appearance. The uniforms are uniformly terrible in this season, in this series. But I found the pacing was good. It was a little action-y. The other thing was that now ships shoot lasers like Star Wars, which was weird to me.
Okay.
Because they go pew, 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 but Star Trek is more of a sustained laser show. So what up with that, guys? Crickets.
That wasn't even something I noticed, so proceed.
Tara,
yeah.
You watched it with me.
I did.
You're not quite the sci-fi stupid head that I am.
True.
But what did you think?
I thought it was good. Sonequa Martin-Green is your lead from Walking Dead. I thought she was very interesting. She got the tone right. I thought she got just enough character in it without it being overwhelming or like too emo for the Star Trek universe. And they also gave her an interesting backstory, which is that she was essentially raised even though she's human, she was raised as a Vulcan after her planet or her base or whatever got destroyed.
Not only a Vulcan, but because that's Sarek, she's before this unknown half sister of Spock. Apparently,
I see. Yeah. I thought that name sounded familiar, but I'm so not in the Spock in the Trek universe. I didn't catch.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you about that. It's a little small universe-y in that Star Wars kind of way. But
okay.
Anyways,
She was good. Michelle Yeoh was great. I would have liked to see her do more fighting, but you know that she did enough. The rest were fine. Oh, Doug Jones as the alien in a whole bunch of makeup. He was good. I don't know. It was fine. It was like not as bad as Enterprise. I don't have I don't have a huge investment in this as part of like the Trek franchise because I'm not super familiar with all of it. I watched TNG, but not slavishly.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was good. It looked expensive. The Klingon war story is interesting. It met all of my expectations, which were neither high nor low. So take that as you will. It came straight from the neutral planet.
Since you brought up the music, Dave, how was the theme music for the series?
The credit sequence was pretty uninspiring. It's sort of like they're doing a whole bunch of things. Like obviously they just farmed it out to some, you know, we'll make the credits company. The topography is terrible. The conceit is like a sort of like blueprinty kind of Da Vinci Codex-esque kind of takes on the ship and some of the elements of the show. But then they'll introduce like this morphs into that. And it just like, you got to pick a lane here. You can't do it all. Somebody says, can you do something that sort of like reminds people of the Game of Thrones credits, but for like 1/100th of the price. And the music was sort of like disjointed. And as I said, the topography that they laid on top of it is totally inappropriate. It looks like something more for a fashion show, these big chunky fonts, and where they put them on top of the graphics they overlaid made no sense. It was really just seemed like a last minute thing. Dave Cole says credits disappointing, but cool. The rest of it was, the rest of it I thought was perfectly fine. And if it's a war story, like if this is sort of like the throughput for the series is going to be the war with the merged Klingon Empire. That's interesting. I don't really understand why they had to redesign the Klingons. Like the actual, this is like the third change the Klingons have had in Star Trek. Those poor guys. They went from kind of normal looking to forehead ridges in the Star Trek, the first movie. And now they're like less defined somehow. It's weird. I don't understand that. They're like, not everybody needs to make Star Trek their own just because you got a new series. Like, it's okay to, you know, embrace some of the Star Trek stuff, such as colored uniforms. I love Star Trek colored uniforms. Don't make everybody wear submarine suits with gold piping. That makes
no
sense.
Well, and some were gold and some were silver. Like, pick silver, one. That's tacky. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if that's their, if, it really is. It's a little Olympian. You know, it's sort of like, you know, the Dummy's Guide to Star Trek. Oh, that's the, you know, they're the red shirt on the bridge, so they're, you know, security, or they're, you know, they got the blue shirt, so they're the smart ones. I embrace that. I know, like, Enterprise did the whole, maybe they're just trying to create continuity. But if they're trying to create continuity, what happened to the Klingons? Like, it's just weird. So I feel like the uniforms were a miss, but the show itself is fine. I will continue to watch it. And if you like Star Trek, make sure you tune into my new podcast. That's What We're Talking About. All about Star Trek, the Star Trek Holiday Special, Star Trek, The Phantom Menace, all the way up to Star Trek, The Force Awakens. You'll love it.
And the internet exploded.
It is time for the canon. John Ramos is pitching this week. Please take it away, John.
Okay, so unlike some other great comedies like 30 Rock, which has had four canon presentations, I was surprised to see that the show I'm submitting has had only one. So I decided to go ahead and present an episode of Veep that is season 5, episode 4, entitled Mother, capital M and no exclamation point, probably better for its chances. So as we all remember, season 4 ended in an electoral college tie with Selena winning, cough, the popular vote. But at this point in the season, there's a recount going on in Nevada, the result of which could swing the election to her. In addition, they've discovered a bunch of missing ballots that are currently being recounted. Jonah, Dan, Amy, Richard, and Karen are all off in Nevada attempting to have the new votes counted, with classic hilarious incompetence ensuing. My favorite part of the storyline is seeing Karen's ever-present equivocating being used for a specific purpose, especially since it's Lennon Parham and she's brilliant. There's also some high-octane foul-mouthedness from Amy that I always enjoy. Also, Mike and Wendy at this point thwarted from adopting a Chinese baby thanks to the sanctions Selena imposed on China to cover the fact that she doesn't know how to use Twitter, are attempting to engage a churchy surrogate, and once again Selena will get in their way. But the meat of the episode. So back on the East Coast, Selena is speaking at a hilariously uncooperative wind farm when Gary gives her the news that her mother has had a stroke. This apparently not being the first time Mother, or Meemaw as Catherine calls her, has had a health crisis. Selena isn't particularly concerned initially, especially given the antagonistic relationship they've had. However, at the hospital, Dr. Mirpuri, one guess whether Selena gets that name right, informs her that all her mother's brain function has ceased and that she, Selena, has the responsibility of pulling the metaphorical, as we're told, plug. There are funny moments involving ex-husband Andrew's trademark smarm and Gary's unwitting Stephen Hawking impression, but soon Selena has to face being at her mother's bedside in clip one.
Mom, you should say hi to her.
Honey, if I wanted to talk to an unconscious person, I'd book myself on Charlie Rose. What happened to her nails? Looks like she's been digging for potatoes or something. Yeah.
Why are you even worried about her hands right now? That is so not important.
Catherine, Mother loves her hands.
Yeah.
She always wore dishwashing gloves when she gave me my bath, which is why I don't do dishes. I just now realize that.
So even if you didn't know anything about Selena's relationship with her mother before this, you can grasp what you need to be aware of from this clip. But I think it's also worth mentioning that the episode does an excellent job of showing how the perceived damage from Selena's mother has been handed down to Catherine. There are more funny moments with Catherine wailing like a sad ghost and Selena pushing into her into Marjorie's arms, cough, and Kent telling her about the effect that her mother's condition will have on her poll numbers. But again, Selena has to face her responsibility. So she and Gary repair to the hospital chapel where he suggests they pray. And she's like, sure, why not? Leading to clip two.
Lord God, please ease my mother's pain and suffering.
Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord.
Ease her passing. Mm. Ease it all. Yes. Ease it down the Lord, let her daughter, thy humble servant, be the first woman elected president of the United States. Please, this is so much to bear.
Oh, it is, Lord, it is.
Hear my prayer.
Hear her prayer.
Lift me up. Actually lift me up because heel is stuck in this thing.
I wish there were an acting award for side eyes specifically because Gary would get it for this scene. But soon Selena is stealing herself and sitting alone with her mother to say goodbye, such as it is in clip 3.
Well, mother, I just want you to... Those you love cannot be lost because they are always a part of you. So.
That last bit, the goodbye, is not her own words. They came from Ben and they weren't his either, as acidly pointed out by Selena at the time. However, the fraught relationship with her mother in some ways only makes the scene more touching. There's something about Selena doing that last little thing of making her nails look good that's so dear in spite of everything. And seeing her cast about for the right words before settling on Ben's Hallmark bereavement card really gets me. And not 2 minutes after the plug, so to speak, is pulled and Meemaw has passed, everyone's hysterically laughing over apparent good news from Nevada. And once the show once again makes Catherine the butt of a very cruel joke, and that for me never gets old. So after some quick but incisive looks at the way Selena is like her mother, and this episode always makes me want to randomly yell, "The pillows are not for sleeping," at people's exiting rooms. And some indications that the Nevada situation is deteriorating, we're at the funeral. We get a first look at the Qatari ambassador, of whom we'll be seeing a lot more, news about China, and lastly, a fight about music that I think will speak to one Sarah D. Bunting in clip 4.
Please let me play the Tim McGraw song, okay? I have it all queued up.
Seriously, Catherine, this is a funeral, not a NASCAR race. I don't have the time for this right now.
When do you have the time then, Mom?
What?
When, okay?
Shh.
Because you don't like Tim McGraw, then nobody is supposed to like Tim McGraw.
Catherine, you are forbidden from saying the words Tim McGraw ever again.
But I got friends to do.
With that apparently settled, Selena settles into her pew, ready to give a eulogy that is probably not going to be all that well received or advised. But news comes in that they officially lost Nevada, and on top of that, the new votes counted swing the popular vote to her opponent. This unleashes a flood of real emotions just as she goes up to speak in our final clip.
My mother had a good piano. I'm sorry. It's just all sort of hitting me right now. I have lost so much. I'm sorry, I can't. Catherine, play the Tim McGraw thing.
So this last clip accomplishes something very difficult in that it can make you laugh and cry at the same time. It's absurd, and you can see Kent / Gary Cole trying not that hard not to laugh, but it's also incredibly touching. Most of the main cast is sobbing with her, and the way she ends up finding comfort in the song, which is about a woman who died, not for nothing, with a little sway along with the melody, is one of my favorite moments. The last scene also is indicative of the degree of difficulty I think the episode successfully overcomes. It's not nearly the most loud episode the show has ever done, but I would argue that it's transformative in the way it meets death as this funny, sad, and unknowable thing, while still being very representative in the selfish yet relatable ways Selena behaves, with the subject matter giving Julia Louis-Dreyfus a chance to shine in a way that perhaps she hadn't had the chance to do before. So that is my pitch, and I am dying to know what you all think.
Boo. It's an excellent submission. I didn't remember that much about it because I hadn't seen it since we watched it the first time. But you make a good point about Selena's concern about her mother's hands, and the fact that this is the detail that she seizes on, that her nails are all messed up. It gives her exactly enough humanity that we know she's not an actual, like, 100% sociopath, but then that's enough. Like, the rest of it is just her still being a self-involved asshole. And, like, granted, at a moment like this, you could be forgiven for being that much of an asshole about your electoral win, particularly if you never got along with your dying mother that well anyway. And so that's why having Catherine around to be feeling what Selena isn't feeling is so good and funny. And the way that Sarah Sutherland commits to ugly crying is
that is loud, honey. That is loud.
Oh, so loud. And also having Andrew around, because he's such a smarmo, and when he finds out at the end that Selena isn't inheriting anything from her mother, that he, like, turns on her, and there's no more talk of them getting back together. Also introducing Monty, his new girlfriend, who is, by the way, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus's real-life half-sister, Lauren Bowles, is nice. It's nice when Julia gets her into stuff. And the hatred over the Tim McGraw song, especially knowing that Sarah was going to have to vote on this, having heard, remember the Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs episode about him. I was looking forward to hearing what she thought about this. So I will throw it to her, Sarah.
Basically, any episode in which Kent mentions that he had a cat named Fibonacci.
Yes, I forgot that. Yep.
We're all good. We are set. But, like, Catherine is the worst, but the actor is the best. Like, and there are just so many little throwaway comments about her and next to her. Like, that is so loud, honey. And the death bump is funny. That line about where she's like speaking to the press and she's talking about all the diverse faces that have come to wish her well in her time of mourning. And she's like, I just wish my mother were alive to see this. Yeah. On her property.
I, like, wanted to clip that, but I couldn't fit it into, like, the pitch that I wanted to tell, but that was hilarious for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's so funny because Dan was not a huge fan of The Good Place and was like, you know who'd be really good on this show? Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I was like, I think she's a little busy, honey. But then we were talking about how we really need to start watching Veep from the beginning, because every time it comes up for the canon or for any other reason, I always enjoy it. Everyone's a jerk, basically. I love it. And her whole, like, maybe I'll get assassinated. I mean, it's just, it's really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it and laughed many times, but it totally had me at my cat Fibonacci, and yep. That is so loud, honey. Like, I just thought it was great and excellent presentation as well.
Absolutely. Dave.
Thanks.
Yeah, that Fibonacci thing is pretty great. My least favorite Veep episode of all time is the Catherine documentary episode. And this is actually, sorry, but this is actually up there with one of my least favorite episodes.
Interesting.
I feel like this episode is sort of the moment, it's analogous to the moment in Parks and Recreation where everybody was actually too mean to Jerry, where it actually stopped being funny for me. And it actually was like, they've over-milked it to the point where the milk is now sour. I feel like... like, this is that. Like, she's way too mean to Catherine here, like, in a way that kind of goes from funny to just sort of like, especially in this context, you know, it felt like it was a, you know, double word score on meanness. And just generally, I felt like Selena Meyer's was kind of out of character in this episode.
Really?
And I think,
Well, wait, hang on. Okay.
Because they're throwing her in a scenario that is sort of like outside of what the show does. And I feel like, okay, maybe she might react that way, but I feel like this is just like a character beat that I didn't need to see. And I didn't really feel like it was either necessarily funny or necessarily deftly approached. Like, I feel like they tried to split the difference and I was left with like neither caring about the comedy nor the pathos involved here. And I just kind of felt like it was a slow episode as a result. There are little moments here and there. You know, the absurdity of being up in the pulpit and, you know, crying about, you know, the results in Nevada while your mother's in a casket just below and everybody else just buying it as you're this completely sincere person. You know, that is funny. And, you know, we've seen that before in other shows. But just overall, I thought this episode just tried to have it both ways and didn't absolutely fail in either one, but just was like average on either side of it. And I just felt like it was just not up to Veep standards. And didn't make me laugh, didn't make me think, didn't make me cry, because I'm a monster.
And the part where she pitched her venture capital ideas was not great either.
But it sounds like that won't make a difference. But let's put it to the vote and find out. Tara Ariano, what say you?
Absolutely disagree with Dave. I think this is Selena as we've come to know her, in that she reacts exactly as I would expect, if not slightly worse. And thank God for Gary to be there to judge her in decorous silence.
Gary's little things during the chapel scene are actually really fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Gary is the audience stand in for people that think Selena is terrible, because he does too, but he still loves her anyway. Yeah. I vote yay.
Sarah.
I would say maybe you have to be a daughter to really understand some of the more monstrous aspects of this, but John did, and so did I. My vote is yes.
All right. I'm going to vote no, but doesn't matter. Veep, season 5, episode 4, Mother, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Emma Kenney, K-E-N-N-E-Y, currently of Shameless. She's just been cast as Darlene's daughter in the reboot of Roseanne. And if you don't watch Shameless, please take a moment to Google Emma Kenney, K-E-N-N-E-Y, and marvel at what amazing casting this is, because she is 100% Sarah Gilbert's mini-me. Congratulations to her.
And loser?
Past topic, the Orville, which fell 50% in the key 18 to 49 demo after moving to its regular time slot. Bye, bitch.
Sorry, was that 1-5 or 5-0?
5-0.
5-0.
Yikes. We're cutting audiences in half.
With lasers.
Yeah, well, deservedly so, because...
Yep.
And especially, it's kind of fun now that the Orville and Star Trek are on the TV at the same time.
Yeah.
Speaking of... Do you know what time it is?
Poop time?
Fart time?
Yeah. It is game time. This is the sixth game time of the season. As a reminder, the season scores are currently value guess 2, Tara 2, Sarah 1. Tight season, tight. Today we are playing Attention to Detail from Dan Casino, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Dan writes, sometimes you just want to organize things. Oh, Tara, organize things.
I'm listening.
And TV shows can be organized in so many ways. In this game, you'll try your hand at three different ways of organizing TV characters and shows. In each question, you'll be given a set of three shows or characters to put in the prescribed order. All right. And we'll get to the order as we go along in the game. Make sense so far?
Sure.
Three things, put them in a certain order. Mm-hmm. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. I'm going to go Tara, Sarah, Jonna. Mm-hmm. Are Jara. We ready to play? Attention to detail.
Almost. What is our steel meal situation?
Oh. Steel meal report, please.
One moment, please.
Dun, 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 dun. Steel meals. Dun, 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 dun.
Sarah steel has meals. Wait, no one has any steel meals. No one is.
Yeah, I think they're all used up.
They're all used up.
There are no steel meals. Therefore, order the juice it up. Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zones will not only give you points, but one steel meal during this game. All right. Are we ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Here we go. Round one, organize the settings of these TV shows from west to east.
Okay.
Seven questions for each of you.
Okay.
Starting with Tara. Mm-hmm. Perfect Strangers.
Yep.
Ugly Betty.
Yep.
The Mentalist.
The Mentalist.
You don't need to name where they're taking place. You just need to organize them.
Okay. The Mentalist is somewhere in California. Perfect Strangers is in Chicago. Ugly Betty is in New York.
You are correct. The Mentalist, Sacramento.
Yeah.
That doesn't scream tax credits. I don't know what does.
One point, right?
Yes, 1 point. Okay. Speaking of tax credits, here are yours. Breaking Bad, Royal Pains, Psych. To Sarah.
Okay. Breaking Bad is in the Great Southwest. Royal Pains is in the Hamptons. I don't know where Psych is. All right, I think it's Psych, Breaking Bad, Royal Pains.
You are correct. Psych is Santa Barbara. Yep. Then followed by Breaking Bad in New Mexico and Royal Pains in New York. Well done. John, here's your first one.
Jay.
Step by Step, South Park, Once Upon a Time.
Well, obviously, South Park is Colorado, and Once Upon a Time, I think, is somewhere in New England. Step by Step, I have no idea. So I'm going to guess Step by Step, South Park, and Once Upon a Time.
No, South Park is the furthest west in Colorado, followed by Step by Step, set in Wisconsin, and then Once Upon a Time, Maine. All right, back to Tara. Arrow, Burn Notice, Happy Days.
Arrow. Okay, I mean, Arrow
is
a
TV show, but a guy shoots arrows.
It's not real.
And fights crime.
It's in Star City or some bullshit. So I'll just say Arrow. What was the second one?
Burn Notice, Mo Yogurt, Mo Problem.
Uh-huh.
And Happy Days.
Okay. I'll say Arrow in wherever the fuck it is. Happy Days in Milwaukee, and then Burn Notice in Miami.
You are correct. Arrow is Pacific Northwest. Burn Notice on the East Coast in Miami, and Happy Days in the middle. Correct. Yep. All right. To Sarah, Frasier, and I ought to know, I'm Frasier. Mork and Mindy, Soap.
Okay. Frasier's in Seattle. Mork and Mindy's in Boulder. But I don't know where Soap is. So let's say Frasier, Mork and Mindy, Soap.
Correct. Nice. Soap is Connecticut.
Ah, sure.
Num Threeers. Saint Elsewhere. Medium. Not Well Done are your three shows. Okay, that's Numbers, Saint Elsewhere, Medium.
Only know one of them.
Which one?
St. Elsewhere, I believe, is in Chicago. Well, I'm going to go with the order that you set them in. Oh, Num Threeers first.
Incorrect. Numbers, Num Threeers, L.A. St. Elsewhere is, in fact, in Boston.
Oh, and that would have helped.
Medium is in Phoenix. So it's Numbers, Medium, St. Elsewhere was your order. Back to Tara, Family Guy, Brady Bunch, Northern Exposure.
Okay, Northern Exposure is the furthest west in Sicily, Alaska. So I'm going to guess Brady Bunch is in the middle because I think it's L.A. And even if it's not, Family Guy is in somewhere in the West, New Hampshire or something, somewhere on the East Coast.
So sorry, your order is Northern Exposure, Brady Bunch, Family Guy?
Yes.
Correct. Family Guy's Rhode Island.
Right. Ish. Okay.
And Brady Bunch is indeed California. All right, to Sarah, Three's Company, Dynasty, Freaks and Geeks.
Okay. Three's Company, Dynasty, Freaks and Geeks.
Three's Company, Dynasty, Freaks and Geeks. Correct.
I don't know where Freaks and Geeks is. So I'm going to say... Actually, I'm going to say that order. Three's Company, Dynasty, Freaks and Geeks.
Correct.
Three's Company, San Diego. Dynasty, Denver. Freaks and Geeks, Detroit area. Yes. All right, John. Murder, She Wrote. Parks and Rec. The Office.
Well, I know where two of them are. So, I'm going to go...
I'll give you a hint. This is all east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
All right.
but thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to go Parks and Rec, The Office, Murder, She Wrote.
Correct.
Yay.
Parks and Rec, Indiana. The Office, Pennsylvania. Murder, She Wrote, Maine. Well done. All right, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
The Wire... Justified, Wayward Pines.
Oh, God. The Wire was Baltimore. Justified was Kentucky. Wayward Pines was question mark. So I'm going to say Wayward Pines, Justified. I already forgot what the first
one was. The Wire.
The Wire.
Okay, so sorry. Just to confirm.
Wayward Pines, Justified, Wire is my guess.
Correct. Okay. Wayward Pines, Idaho. Justified, Kentucky. Can't. The Wire, Baltimore.
All right.
So little goes on in Idaho. I bet know. If you went to some state line or some county line, it would be home of Wayward Pines.
Yeah.
In the Heat of the Night, True Blood, Walking Dead.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Yeah. In Tough the one. Heat of the Night.
Yes.
What's the second one?
True Blood, blah, and The Walking Dead.
This one really All requires right. a knowledge of
actual geography.
United States map. It's yeah. not general.
The South.
Okay. If I only knew where In the Heat of the Night was, because I think True Blood and Walking Dead are in that order, and then wherever The Heat of the Night is. Which might be Texas, but it could also be the Carolinas. I don't know. Okay. Heat of the Night, True Blood, Walking Dead.
Fuck.
All right. Knows. True Blood, Louisiana. In the Heat of the Night, Mississippi.
Yeah. That's what I
mean. Shit.
Walking Dead, Georgia area.
Fuck.
Okay. John Ramos.
Yes.
Cheers. Mary Tyler Moore Show. Bonanza.
Bye, Mom.
Cheers, Mary Tyler Moore, Bonanza.
I'm going to say Bonanza, Mary Tyler Moore, Cheers.
You would be correct.
Nice.
That is Nevada, Minneapolis, Boston. Back to Tara, The Sopranos, The Shield, and The Deadwood.
The Deadwood.
The Shield is somewhere in California. Deadwood is in South Dakota. What was the first one?
Sopranos.
Sopranos is in New Jersey.
Correct. Saving Grace, Army Wives, Big Love.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Fuck you, Dan. Come on now.
Yeah.
Remember who to blame.
Snake Eyes. I'm sorry. Can you read them again, please?
I certainly can. Thank Saving you. Grace, Army Wives, Big Love.
Because I just have no idea where any of them is except Big Love. Let's say Saving Grace, Big Love, Army Wives.
Big Love, Utah, Saving Grace, Oklahoma, and Army Wives, South Carolina. Yeah. John.
That was mean.
Yep. Well, wasn't easy. Oz, CSI, iZombie.
CSI a zombie. No, which one is the farthest west for sure, but the other two.
Which is?
iZombie is in Pacific
First
Northwest.
Slot, iZombie.
Yeah. Was that CSI, Famous
CSI
Original,
and Oz.
Oz. Oz is in New York. CSI.
CSI, yeah. Original CSI.
Yeah. Where's CSI? I'm going to go, iZombie, CSI, and Oz.
Correct. Yeah. iZombie, Northwest, CSI, Las Vegas, Oz, upstate New York. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Newhart, Hannibal, 6 feet under.
Okay, 6 feet under is in L.A. Oh, what were the other two? Hannibal and what?
Newhart.
Okay. Oh, okay, Hannibal is in Maryland and Newhart is in Vermont. Okay, glad that's right.
Correct. All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
ER, Dexter, Duck Dynasty.
Oh, for fuck's sake. All right. ER is in Chicago. Duck Dynasty is somewhere ducky. And Dexter is in Miami, so that is my order.
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
ER, Duck Dynasty, Dexter.
Duck Dynasty, ER, Dexter.
Where's Duck Dynasty set?
Louisiana.
Oh.
Close, but yeah.
That's west? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Those fuckers.
Gilmore Girls, Pretty Little Liars, Fear the Walking Dead.
I'll say Fear the Walking Dead, Pretty Little Liars, Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Fear the Walking Dead, West Coast, Pretty Little Liars, Pennsylvania, Gilmore Girls, Connecticut. All right. Moving on. Here's everybody's last question of this round.
Thank God.
Republic of Doyle. Degrassi. Ice Road Truckers.
Okay. Ice Road Truckers, Degrassi, Republic of Doyle.
Correct. Nice. Just a little asterisk. Ice Road Truckers, mostly set in Alaska, but apparently also in Manitoba, but we ignore the Manitoba.
Oh, okay.
Bit.
And then Degrassi's in Toronto and Republic of Doyle's in the Maritime somewhere.
Yeah. Newfoundland, probably. Correct. All right. To Sarah. Revenge, Suits, Andy Griffith Show.
Suits. Okay, I don't know where Suits is, but it seems westy. So let's go with Suits, Andy Griffith, and the other one, which I know is in the Hamptons.
Revenge. Andy Griffith, North Carolina. Suits, New York City. Revenge, Long Island.
All right.
Yeah, really close. All right, this is our last question of the first round. For John Ramos, Orange is the New Black, The Closer, CSI Cyber.
Did CSI Orange Cyber take Black place the... in a physical location?
Orange is the New Black, Cape The Closer, side. And CSI Cyber. CSI Medium.
Shit. I feel like The Closer is somewhere like kind of south, but not too far west. I know where Orange is the New Black is. I'll go with CSI Closer, Orange is the New Black.
Closer is West Coast, actually. Mm. And then CSI is Washington, D.C., and Orange is the New Black, upstate New York. Yeah. All right, guys, let's please hear them scores.
Okay, I have 7 points. John has 4 points. Sarah has 3 points.
All right, that means Sarah D. Bunting, you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
Woo. Good luck, Sarah!
Thanks, buddy!
So, 2 points and a steel meal up for grabs. Which monster weighs 387 pounds?
Which monster?
Yes, first name of the monster who weighs 387 pounds, please.
Jesus.
How many first names of the Munsters do you know?
Not any that are helpful, since I'm pretty sure Lily does not weigh 357 pounds and Lurch is not technically a Munster. But I'm still going to say Lurch.
Isn't Lurch from Adam's Family?
I think so.
Probably.
Herman. Herman Munster.
Oh, yeah, him.
What color does Wonder Woman sport in the middle of her headband?
In the middle of her headband?
Yep.
Red.
Yeah!
There's one. How many pitfalls are there in each pitfall round? Pitfall!
Oh.
Alex Trebek's Canadian game show with
what
elevators.
Three.
How many pitfalls are there in each pitfall round?
Three.
I think we've had this question before. Maybe I really remember all the pitfall questions.
Could be.
All right. So you just need one out of the last half of these questions. What Hill Street Blues character suffered a fatal heart attack we definitely had this card before. While making love to Grace Gardner.
What character?
Yeah. Died of a heart attack making love to Grace Gardner.
I really want to say that it's Bunce, but it isn't. But I'll just say Bunce.
It's Phil Esterhaus.
Oh, right.
What black and white sitcom police car was painted red and white so it wouldn't be confused with the real one during filming?
What?
Black and white sitcom police car was painted red and white.
Police car.
So wouldn't be confused with the real one during filming?
Dragnet was in a sitcom. Car 54? Where are you?
Yay!
Nice! All right, for chiss and giggles, what TV crime show was Meg Foster axed from after the 1981-82 season?
I know this.
After you, because I have no idea.
Cagney and Lacey.
Ah.
Correct. All right, so that means, Sarah D. Bunting, you just got 2 points and a steel meal.
Hold on to second place.
All right, round two, guys. First names. Put the characters in alphabetical order by their first names.
Oh, shit.
Oh, boy.
If a character usually goes by a shortened version of a name, Larry for Lawrence, for example,
sure.
Use the shortened version, please.
Okay.
Here we go. Tara.
Yep.
Are you ready?
Yep.
MacGyver, Monk, Inspector Morris.
Morse?
Morris? Morse. Sorry, not Morris. That's a different inspector. That's that inspector that...
It's an orange cat.
Feline deaths.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I only know one first name, which is Adrian Monk. So yep. I'm going to say Monk Morse MacGyver.
Oh.
Dang.
Adrian Monk, Angus MacGyver, Endeavor is...
Oh, Endeavor, of course.
Yeah. Captain Picard, Captain Sisko, Captain Steubing.
Damn you, Picky.
Okay. Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Beryl Steubing, and... so shit. Okay, I believe it is Picard, Steubing, Sisko.
John, what name is she missing?
I'm sorry, I stopped. It's Benjamin.
Oh, oh, shit.
Benjamin, Jean-Luc, and then Meryl Steubing... Columbo, Magnum, Kojak.
Columbo, Magnum, Kojak.
Okay. So here's a little trivia for you. Mm-hmm. Columbo's first name never mentioned, but we see it on his badge.
Oh.
Interesting. Can you say them again one more time? Not that it's going to help.
No.
Columbo, Kojak.
Columbo, Magnum, Kojak.
All right. I'm going to go Magnum, Kojak, Columbo.
The absolute opposite order.
Yes.
Columbo, comma, Frank, Theo Kojak,
Theo.
Thomas Magnum.
Yep.
Starsky, Cotter, Ponch.
Ha!
Starsky, Cotter, and Ponch.
Yeah, I'm writing them down. Okay, I think... Oh, God. I'm going to say Cotter, Ponch, Starsky. Dang.
Do you know any of their first names?
I think Ponch is John.
Nope.
Okay, then no.
Dave Starsky.
Uh-huh.
Frank Ponch. Gabe Cotter.
Okay.
All right, to Sarah. Captain Janeway. Nurse Hathaway. Lieutenant Uhura.
Janeway, Hathaway, and Uhura.
Janeway, Hathaway, Uhura, yes.
Oh, I don't know any of them except one. So I'm going to say Hathaway, Uhura, Janeway.
Oh, close. Carol Hathaway, Catherine Janeway, Nyota Uhura is your order.
All right.
Matt Duck, Saul Goodman, ADA McCoy. So for Saul, we're looking for the real name.
Okay. I'm going to go.
We're still looking for our first correct answer of this round.
Yeah, it's a hard round.
What order did you say them in again, Dave? Sorry.
I said Matlock. Saul Goodman, ADA McCoy.
All right, I only know one, which is Slippin' Jimmy. So I'm going to reverse your order. Keep Jimmy in the middle, but flip the other two. Or Saul Goodman in the middle.
Your order is Ben Matlock, Jack McCoy, Jimmy Goodman. Well, Jimmy, yeah.
Jimmy McGill.
Yeah. Yeah. Father Dowling, Mr. Bates, Dr. House.
Okay, for some reason I think Bates' first name is Andrew, so I'm going to say Bates, Gregory House, and question mark Dowling.
Opposite, actually. Frank Dowling, Gregory House, John Bates.
Why are so many of these assholes named Frank, I would like to know. It seems like way more than in the general population.
So you could say, fuck you, Frank, at times like this?
Fair enough.
The novelist Castle, Miami Police Lieutenant Kane, mentalist Jane.
Okay, Castle, Kane, and Jane is...
yep.
Okay, I believe it is Castle, Kane, and Jane.
Horatio Kane, Patrick Jane, Richard Castle.
Okay.
Oh,
still looking for our first correct answer, round
so
two.
So wrong.
Dr. Bones Brennan, Dr. McDreamy Shepherd, Lieutenant McNulty.
Oh my God.
Bones, McDreamy, and McNulty.
No idea.
No idea?
No.
Well, take a guess.
I'd say McDreamy, McNulty, Bones.
Constant Brennan, Derek Shepherd, Jimmy James McNulty. Tatara.
Yep.
Dr. Melfi. Corporal Klinger. Corporal? No, that's not right.
No, that is.
Yeah. Is it?
I think so.
Okay. Dr. Ross.
Okay. I'm going to say Doug Ross, Jennifer Melfi, question mark Klinger. Hey!
Finally!
Nice
yay!
Job,
what is Klinger's
name? Doug Ross.
Name? What is it?
Jennifer Melfi. Maxwell Klinger.
Maxwell, sure.
Okay, to Sarah, the Bionic Woman, Big Pussy, Small Wonder.
Oh my God. Okay.
Two robots and a pussy.
Bionic Woman. What was the middle one?
Big Pussy.
Big Pussy. Okay.
Small Wonder.
Okay. Small Wonder. All right. I think she's last. God, Bionic Woman. Okay, Big Pussy, Bionic Woman, Small Wonder?
Jamie Summers, Salvador, whatever.
And Vicky Pensiero. The
robot. Yeah. Vicky the robot. Vicky.
Sadly, I only got Vicky right. I'm going to pull my jersey card for this.
Who knows?
The $6 million man. Agent Coulson. Leela.
Ooh.
All right. I actually know two. I actually know two of them this time.
Well, then let us know.
It's Phil Coulson and what was the first one you said? Or
$6 million man.
Steve Austin. So I'm going to go Leela Coulson Austin.
Phil Coulson, Steve Austin, Taranga Leela. Archer, Futurama's Fry, Under the Dome's Barbie.
Oh, no!
Domer.
Oh, I don't remember his first name, that fucking asshole.
Klaus?
All right. I'm just going to say Philip J. Fry, Sterling Archer, Shitbox Barbie, even though that is not correct alphabetically.
Shitbox Barbie.
Fuck that guy.
Is that an actual?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Only 10 were ever made.
No point in your rambling or incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is
Domer.
Now
Domer.
I've already forgotten your order.
I'm sure it's wrong. Fry, Archer, Barbie was my order.
Dale Barbara.
Dale Barbara.
Philip J. Fry, Sterling Archer. Okay.
Sorry, Tara, that was terrible.
All right. The real first name of the Hulk from The Incredible Hulk. Daredevil, Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, for Christ's sake. Okay.
Okay, I'm just going to put this out in the open after the question is answered. Three steel meals if anybody can get Walker's first name.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, once again, the Hulk, Daredevil, Walker, Texas Ranger.
I will not be claiming those steel meals except by accident, because I'm just going to have to cram him in somewhere. The Hulk's first name is David, and Daredevil's first name is Matt, I think. So I'm going to say Hulk, Walker, Daredevil.
Ah! All right. Anybody want to take a crack at Walker's first name?
Frank?
No. great guess, though. Cordell Walker.
Oh, fuck off.
Come on.
David Banner, Matt Murdock.
More like Bordell.
Nice.
Dr. Green, Detective Munch, Inspector Perot.
Well, as usual, I know one.
That one being?
Poirot is Hercule.
Hercule.
I don't know. The first one you said, Poirot. The second one you said.
Way to pay attention, John. All right. It's Hugh, John Munch, Mark Green. Mrs. Columbo, Mrs. Coach, Superintendent Chalmers. A little bit of trivia. For the longest time, my video game nom de plume was Super Nintendo Chalmers.
Another little bit of trivia. You say that every time his character comes up.
Another bit of trivia. Shut up.
Okay. I don't know.
No.
Smash cut 10 minutes later. Hey, your answer, please, John.
Okay. I don't know. It's me. It's not John.
Oh, sorry.
Another bit of trivia.
I don't know Chalmers or Mrs. Columbo, so I'm going to say Mrs. Columbo, Chalmers, Tammy Taylor.
Another piece of trivia. Everybody shut up. Gary Chalmers.
What is it?
Kate Columbo, Tammy Taylor.
What's Chalmers' first name?
Gary.
Gary.
Okay. One R.
All right.
The Earl of Grantham, NCIS Special Agent Gibbs, The Wire's Lieutenant Daniels.
Ooh.
Okay.
I'll just give you an extra hint. Lieutenant Gibbs' first name is not navally, but it should be.
So you say.
It really should be. All right, so I've got the Earl of Grantham, sub guy, and
Daniels.
It's bullshit. All right, I'm going to say Daniels, Downton, Gibbs.
Cedric Daniels, Leroy Gibbs, Robert Crawley.
Fuck.
Yeah. All right, last question of this round.
Thank God.
CSI Tech Grissom, Krusty the Clown, and Littlefinger.
Oh.
Let's put all those guys in a show together.
Honestly.
Yeah.
All right. What was the middle one?
All right.
I know two.
Jesus, start writing this shit
I
down.
I am.
CSI Tech Grissom, Krusty the Clown, Littlefinger.
Krusty the Clown. I don't remember Krusty the Clown's name, unfortunately. So, all right.
He's got a lot of corroborating evidence right here.
That's not him. That's Rory B. Bellows. I know.
Well, Grissom is Gil. That's Grissom Billy Joel. Is Gil, and Littlefinger is Peter Baelish. So I'm gonna go Grissom, Baelish, and the other one.
Krusty the Clown. Gil Grissom, yeah. Herschel
Michael.
Of course.
That was buried in my memory somewhere, but
and Peter Baelish. Yeah. All right. Scores, please. All right.
Okay, I have 8 points. Sarah has 5 points. John has 4 points.
All right, so the John, you're now in.
Good luck, John.
Thanks.
Good luck, John.
I think we're going to need to go to eBay or something and get a new, see if we can find a new TV box. I'm pretty sure we've not gone through the questions.
Well, as the last one proved, we don't remember them from time to time. So, you have time to find another.
But you might remember, like, you know, key ones, or everybody's just going to start guessing the Carringtons, you know.
Peter Esther
House. Been doing this whole time anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have Dynasty anyway. Locked and loaded.
I think we can unpinch a penny and spend $20.
I'm not saying we can't. I'm just saying it's fine for today because we
can we talk about it later? Yeah. Bit of trivia.
Trivia. This trivia card has been used. What game show features the games Plinko and Three Strikes? Aww,
The Price is Right.
Yay!
How old was Wally Cleaver when Leave It to Beaver first aired? The age of Wally Cleaver.
God. 11.
Oh! 12.
Oh, no!
What network did Max Robinson become the first black news anchor man on in 78? What network?
One in three chance.
ABC.
Yep.
ABC.
I'm sorry. Correct.
Hey.
Which awesome? Which had worst ratings? Castaways on Gilligan's Island or the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island? 50-50. Castaways or Harlem Globetrotters? Which shit the bed worse?
Wow, that's a tough one.
What's Castaways?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Oh, is that the I think that might be the movie where they get off and come back or something, maybe?
Whatever, I'm gonna say Castaways.
What's B.A. Baracus's military rank?
See, pilot, right?
Probably not.
Colonel.
Sergeant.
Jesus.
What night did Goodyear Playhouse and the Olcal Hour originally air on? Alcoa Hour.
Alcoa. One in seven chance.
That is Sunday.
Wait, Alcoa Hour. Isn't that the aluminum company?
Yes.
Yeah.
Conglomerate thing? Okay. All right. What night? One in seven
Sunday.
Chance. Yes.
Yay!
All right. So that's 2 points for John. So quick score break, please, Star.
Okay. Well, things have changed. Now, Sarah has 5. John has 6. I have 8.
All right. And here we are. Last round. 5 questions each.
Oh, did I get it? Did I get a steel meal for that as well? Or
you
Sarah
did.
Sarah and yes. I both have one now? Okay.
Has been noted. Right, you each have a steel meal.
Put the shows in order by which they're set, from furthest in the past to most recent.
Oh, okay. Chronologically.
For shows that have covered a long period of time,
yep.
It's the year when the first
when it started.
The show is first set.
Okay, yep. Got it.
Okay?
Yep.
Here we go. Tatara.
Yep.
Life on Mars, Whitechapel, Prime Suspect.
Okay, Whitechapel, Life on Mars, Prime Suspect. Dang.
Life on Mars, the 70s. I think Whitechapel, I think you thought it was a throwback, but I think it's a
modern-day
thing. Yeah. So Life on Mars, the 70s, Prime Suspect, 80s and 90s, Whitechapel, 2009.
All right.
Huh. Yeah.
Buck Rogers, Duck Dodgers, the Jetsons.
What?
Buck Rogers, Duck Dodgers, and the Jetsons.
Duck Dodgers, Buck Rogers, and the Jetsons.
Jetsons 2062. Not that far away, guys. Duck Dodgers, the 24th and a half century. Buck Rogers, the 25th century. All right, John. Almost Human.
Heard of it.
Humans.
Heard of them.
Westworld. Mm. Almost Human, Humans, Westworld.
Mm.
From oldest to most recent.
Don't really know for sure, but I'm going to say Westworld, Humans, Almost Human.
Humans set present day. Alternate present day, but mm-hmm. present day.
Right.
Almost Human, 2048. Westworld, 2052. 4 years. All right. Spartacus, I, Claudius, Rome.
Oh, man.
That's bullshit.
Okay. This is a straight guess. Rome, Spartacus, I. Fine by me.
Spartacus. I'm not sure which series that is because I feel like there's seven of them. But that's 70 BCE. Rome, 50 BCE. I, Claudius, 22
right.
BCE. Downton Abbey, Upstairs, Downstairs, 2010 series. Ripper Street.
Okay, Ripper Street, Downton, Upstairs, Downstairs.
Ding.
Correct.
Nice.
1889.
That's what you were thinking of, Tara.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. I realize
that. Whitechapel.
Yeah.
1889 for Ripper Street. Downton Abbey starts 1912, and then Upstairs, Downstairs, 1936.
Yeah.
The Tutors. The Borgias.
The Tutors, not the Tutors.
The Tutors, the Borteras, and Will. Tutors, Borgias, Will. Has Will been canceled yet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Good.
I don't even know what that is. So,
it's Shakespeare. But
oh,
like a
that yeah, yeah, yeah right, that's right.
It's Shakespeare, yeah. But he fucks.
And Carl Urban is his partner, and they solve crimes with quills and shit.
All right, I'm going to say the Borgias, Will, the Tudors.
Oh, close. Borgias, Tudors, Will. Mid-1400s, mid-1500s, and late-1500s. Endeavor, Inspector Morse, Inspector Lewis.
That order. Endeavor, Morse, Lewis.
Nice. 60s, 80s, and 90s, and the 2000s. Well done.
Thanks.
All right. The Hour, Vikings, The Nick.
Vikings, The Nick, The Hour.
That's right.
Battlestar Galactica 2003 series. Caprica, Galactica 1980.
Galactica 1980, 03 Galactica, Caprica.
Well, first of all, Caprica was a prequel to Battlestar Galactica, so it's Caprica, Battlestar Galactica, Galactica 1980. You remember that in Battlestar Galactica, the end, it was revealed that they landed about like 100,000 years before the present day, because all their bones ended up being Lucy and all that horseshit.
Sure.
So it is Caprica, Battlestar Galactica, Galactica 80. Tricky question.
Yep.
Carnival, Mad Men, MASH.
Carnival, MASH, Mad Men.
Outlander. We're talking about the most pasty past part of Outlander.
Yeah.
Turn, colon, Washington Spies.
Heard of it?
Is that still on?
No.
That's still on, right?
Nope. It's done.
Phew. Rain. Outlander. Outlander. Turn. Rain.
Turn, Rain, Outlander.
Rain, Outlander, Turn.
Ah!
Outlander, 1740s, Turn, 1770s, Rain, way back in the 1500s. Foyle's War, China Beach, Masters of Sex.
Fuck.
Foyle's War.
China
Beach, Masters of Sex.
I'll say Masters of Sex, China Beach, Foyle's War.
Has anybody done... Incorrect. Before I give the answer, has anybody done a intro for Masters of Sex in the style of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
And also,
I
can I use my Steel Meal?
Steel Meal.
Here we go.
Foyle, Masters of Sex, China Beach.
Yeah.
There's a point.
Nicely done.
Foyle's War, 1940. Masters of Sex, 50s. China Beach, 67. Murdoch Mysteries, Call the Midwife, Aftermath.
Oh, Murdoch Mysteries, Call the Midwife, Aftermath. That order. Dang.
Murdoch Mysteries, 1890s. Aftermath, 1953, Call the Midwife, late 50s. All right, last question. Anne with an E, Black Sails, Taboo.
Fuck. Black Sails, Taboo, Anne with an E?
Wait, how's that the last question?
Did I was one? Wondering that also. Did you skip one?
Okay, sorry. Can I have your answer again, please?
Yes, Black Sails, Taboo, Anne with an E.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Can I have a score break very quickly?
Okay. John has 7, Sarah has 9, I have 10.
Okay. I don't know where the last question was, but since it doesn't make a difference. Right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know where the last question went. But let's do the tiebreaker for shits and giggles,
sure.
Shall we?
Okay.
Shouldn't John get another question?
Well, we just said it doesn't make a difference. So fine. Skip it because I don't know where it is.
Interesting bit of trivia. I don't like that. Just skip.
A little bit of trivia. Do you want to pause for 20 minutes as I figure out one?
No.
Okay, I'll make up one right now.
I love it.
Smash. Wait. Century City.
Uh-huh.
And John Adams.
Pretty sure you got this one, Ito.
I think it's John Adams, Century City, and Smash.
How did you
What's
get that
Century
wrong?
City?
I'm taking... Please take 1 point off, John, for that terrible answer.
No, I'm
Century
not doing
City
that.
Is future space lawyers.
Yes.
Oh, I had no it's idea okay. it took place. I had no idea what that show was ever, so...
probably
I thought it just
Park
took
West
place in
something.
Century City.
No. I mean, it okay. does, but...
Four shits and giggles, and the last person standing will get a steel meal.
Okay.
Put these 1980 TV shows one by one. They're pairings.
Okay.
All right. So last person standing wins a steel meal.
Okay.
And we'll start in the order. So Tara.
Yeah.
Benson versus Family Ties.
Benson Family
which,
Ties.
Which?
Oh.
Debuted first.
Benson.
Correct. Sarah, Family Ties versus the Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard was first.
Dukes of Hazzard versus Dallas.
Dallas first.
Dallas versus Archie Bunker's Place.
Dallas.
Archie Bunker's Place versus the Jeffersons.
The Jeffersons.
The Jeffersons versus Laverne and Shirley.
The Jeffersons again.
Laverne and Shirley versus the Love Boat.
Oh, Love Boat.
Mm. Ah!
Tarza.
Okay.
The Love Boat versus Taxi.
Taxi.
Oh! And value guess, pick up the steel mills. But John, just to see, can you get the next one? Taxi versus Falcon Crest.
Taxi.
Yay!
Correct. Legitimate win. All right.
Hey, how many steel meals is that?
One.
One. Okay.
For value guess.
Got it.
Good job, Tara. It was a tough one.
It was.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We added up all our points and went to the good place for a discussion of season two before going around the dial with stops at Better Things, Halt and Catch Fire, American Beauty Star, and Star Trek Discovery. John's pitch for Veep's mother passed the Senate vote that is the Extra Hot Great canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Tekel, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Please call me Frank.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Interesting bit of trivia. Hawaiian pizza is terrible.
And John Ramos.
Another interesting bit of trivia. Chowder is gross.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time, right here, on Interesting Bit of Trivia.
Oh, sounds like everything's going well back there, too.
We're trying out the new butthole spiders.
Huh?
They're enormous.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.